Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello, everybody. Brace yourselves, parents. As I said before the news, today, starting today, you can now check online for your children's New York standardized test scores, the results from the new tests that were down so much from the year before. We are very grateful to New York City Schools Chancellor Dennis Walcott for making himself available today to answer your questions about the new tests and the new Common Core curriculum on which they were based. Also out today, a new independent study that finds big gains at some of the small public schools that the mayor and his chancellors have created. So we'll talk about that, too. Chancellor Walcott joins us along with the city's chief academic officer, Shale Polakow-Saransky. Welcome back, both of you, to WNYC. Good morning.
And good morning to you. Thank you for having us. And I must say, this is Shale's first day back from his honeymoon. So it's always, look at, he's back from his honeymoon and he's on your show.
I was wondering why you were smiling so much.
I saw Shale first thing this morning. He had this huge smile on his face. And I mean, we're so happy for him and his wife, Cynthia, and we wish them the best. But it's an exciting day today.
Congratulations. And listeners, Dennis Walcott and Shale Polakow-Saransky will take your questions, 212-433-WNYC. Parents, teachers, principals, anyone with a stake in this can call in, 212-433-9692. And so, Chancellor Walcott, citywide, the English test scores went from 47% testing proficient last year to just 26% this year. On the math test, it was 60% proficient last year, cut in half to just 30% this year, if all the numbers I've read are right. What do you want to say to parents in general who are about to look up their kids' scores and may be in for a shock?
So a couple of things. One, it's not a fair comparison because these scores represent a new, higher, tougher standard. And that's important. The mayor has talked about this. I've talked about this. Merrill Tisch, John King, our chancellor and commissioner, respectively, from the Board of Regents and State Department of Education, have talked about it. Shale talks about it repeatedly. We have a responsibility to prepare our students for college and careers, and these tests now measure and are aligned to college and career readiness, and that's an important thing. So, one, the parents shouldn't compare their scores from this year to last year. Two, when they go online or they get the scores, there'll be a lot of information and talking about how their student has done or their child has done or their children have done and talking about the level of proficiency, and it really gets into a lot of detailed information. And so I think what we should say to our parents is that we understand that it'll be a shock, but the reality is it's measuring where our students are in a tougher standard right now, as it should be.
What about those kids for whom these scores matter for middle school or high school admissions? My son went through this a few years ago. He had to score at a certain percentile on the statewide test in order to even qualify to take an admissions test for his first choice middle school. Shale, what do you say to parents facing that right now?
So we've been very clear with our schools that no one should be punished because the test got harder. And so if a student is applying to a selective school this year, every other kid in the city is in the same boat as them. All the kids they're competing with for those slots are in the same boat. Those schools are going to look at kids in rank order. So even if many fewer students scored at the highest levels, there are still kids that scored better than others. And for those competitive slots, those will be significant differences. But no one is going to be in a disadvantageous position compared to others. And if you think about the level 1, 2, 3, and 4 a little bit differently now, mm-hmm. It used to be passing on the old state exam meant you were on track to graduate high school. Now passing and getting a level 3 means you're on track to succeed in college. And that's a much tougher standard. ACT came out with a study this year that said 25% of kids nationally are at that level. New York City is seeing similar numbers. And so if you got a level 2, which is one step down, it means you're now on track to graduate high school. but you have work to do to catch up and get ready for college.
But again, for those parents who need these scores for their kids to qualify for certain potential admissions for middle school or high school, when you say nobody will be penalized, you mean the tests will not be a criteria for this year?
No, the tests will be used in a normative way. Kids will be compared to each other. So instead of having to get to a certain cutoff to be eligible, you look at the kids in relationship to each other, and the schools are going to dip down into lower performance levels because everyone's score has moved down.
But is that an apples-to-apples comparison? I want to play you a clip of Merrill Tisch, who you mentioned, mm-hmm. Chancellor Wolcott, the New York State Board of Regents chancellor. She was on this show recently talking about these same issues, and I asked her about the fairness of testing kids on the Common Core curriculum when the core itself has not been fully implemented. And here's part of her answer.
The preparation across the state has been uneven. 2.5 years ago, New York State announced that we were shifting to the Common Core. In some districts, there has been a magnificent amount of capacity building around professional development to teach to the Common Core. Other districts, not so much. As we go forward here, I'd like to remind your listeners that New York State spends over $1 billion a year, $1 billion a year towards professional development. It is going to be our ability to target those dollars to make sure that every teacher in every school district gets the preparation that is required in order to teach to this new higher standard.
Merrill Tisch, the Board of Regents Chancellor. So my question is, at the beginning of that answer, she talked about uneven preparation to teach for these tests. So is it an apples-to-apples comparison if some schools, some districts, have been training more effectively to implement the core curriculum prior to these tests? Maybe students can't be compared to each other and have that be fair.
So let's talk about New York City, for example. So New York City, under Shale's leadership and the prior chancellors and myself, have been working very hard in preparing our schools for this new test. We've been talking about it on a regular basis. Matter of fact, Shale's been on your show talking about it. We provided professional development, and we'll be providing more professional development over this coming school year. We have doubled down the amount of money. We had $50 million allocated in the prior year. This coming year, we'll have $100 million. So we've done a lot of work over a three-year period, and our scores reflect that when you take a look at our scores compared to the other urban districts. But also,
so you think it's even around the city? She said uneven around the state.
You're going to have, just like in the past, though, you're going to have some unevenness in our schools, and that's part of the focus of our academic people, our networks, and our superintendents in working with those schools to make sure that at a higher level. But again, I think you will have New York City well ahead of the curve compared to other districts. But within the city itself, as Shale indicated, it's going to be normative in having our students compared to each other. And I think that's where the fairness comes into play.
Could I just add, we started this over 2 years ago, and we've asked every teacher in New York City to begin 2 years ago teaching Common Core curriculum to kids, and they slowly phased it in. We didn't want to do it quickly because we wanted teachers to master it. And we've seen across our schools a different kind of teaching. And that's really the point of this. This is not really about the test scores. The test scores that we got this year are a baseline that we're going to watch over the coming years to see how we improve. And it's important information, but the real change that's happening is what teachers are doing in the classroom and how they're teaching and creating entry points for kids who previously were excluded.
And I think the other change is just having this type of conversation, quite frankly. And it's been very helpful to the city and people, one, getting a clearer understanding of what we mean by college and career readiness. And as Shale has indicated, the type of teaching that's taking place in our schools. And I know when we walk into our schools, you see and feel that change itself. We put in place a Common Core library, which has been really downloaded a significant amount of time as far as both teachers here, but also outside of New York City, accessing information. And that's the change that's taking place. And the benefits will get stronger to our students as we move forward as well.
New York City Schools Chancellor Dennis Wolcott, New York City Chief Academic Officer Shale Policow-Saransky, 212-433-WNYC, Maya in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hello, Maya.
Saying right now. Hello?
Maya, are you a student in the schools?
Yeah. What grade? I go to PS24.
Uh-huh, in the Bronx. And what grade are you going into?
I'm going into sixth right now, and I took the state tests in fifth grade.
Uh-huh, and you have a question for the chancellor?
Yes.
Good morning.
My school started preparing for the tests in, like, January, and I would like to know, like, why do we have to take so many practice tests? Because the practice tests, we keep doing the same things over and over again.
Well, Maya, thanks for calling in. I think that what you're saying is really important, that we want kids to get really interesting stuff in their classrooms where they're doing a lot of writing, and the kinds of things that they're practicing aren't just tests, but practicing how to do the kinds of assignments they need to succeed when they get into high school and then eventually into college. And sometimes practice tests can be helpful, but the real help comes from practicing your writing and practicing how you defend your ideas when you read.
I don't know if Maya's still on or not.
I think she is.
I'm still on.
Maya, did you do a lot of reading as well in your class and in your school?
Yeah.
And part of the goal is to make sure that the books, not just at your school, but schools throughout New York City, are different type of books that are assigned for reading, which helps the students become more literative, more having the ability to have the literature there to think things through critically. And part of our goal is to make sure we infuse that for all of our schools. So hopefully it's not just about the testing, but it's the type of material and the type of teaching that's taking place in your school as well.
Okay, because, like, it makes a lot of sense because we're always doing the same things over and over, so maybe, like, we're getting better at it.
Let's hope. And maybe if, and I guess maybe if you're good at it, some of your classmates aren't, and maybe that's why they do it. But do you think it took away from your being able to do other things in school time, Maya?
Sometimes, yes, because we're not learning more new things, but we're practicing the things we already know.
A part also, Maya, is for the ability of our students to have a deeper understanding of the things that they know and having the ability to discuss it in the classroom and support their points as well. And that's part of the process that we've been going through in our schools over the last several years and moving forward. So hopefully that will increase, but the ability to understand, to debate your point, to be able to write your point and having a way of sustaining the information on a long-term basis is part of our goal.
Maya, I can say that as a sixth grader who calls up a radio show and can talk to the chancellor with such poise and clarity that you are set up to do really well in school. So thank you very much for calling in.
And Maya, maybe not for you, but for the people who are in the Bronx or want to go to the Bronx, there'll be a log-on and learn week session this evening in the Bronx for those who may not have computers at home, and they can find out the information about their child's test score. And that log-on and learn session will take place at the Parkchester Library at 1985 Westchester Avenue, and that's tonight. And then tomorrow, one will be held in Brooklyn at the Sunset Park Library, and then on Wednesday in Staten Island at the St. George Library, and Thursday in Manhattan at the Seward Park Library, and Friday in Queens at the Flushing Library. And, of course, people can call 311 to get that information as well.
Of course, if you're talking about people who can't access the web, one in each borough really isn't very much, is it?
Well, it's not. But, again, it's the first time we're doing it. We're expanding the information base, and then we'll have training sessions in our schools, and then we have people going in to work with our parent coordinators as well to make sure parents get the information. If parents don't know their student ID number, they need to contact the school, and they can go to the school directly. So there are a variety of access points, but we're expanding it out, and we're starting tonight. First time, my understanding, that any district has had this type of session in providing information to our parents about their child's score.
Here's a teacher calling in, Bill in Queens. Bill, you're on WNYC.
Yeah, hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have two questions. I'm a teacher since 1996 in Queens, a high school teacher. And the first question is about the rubric. I think there's a problem with the rubric. It's 1 to 4. It doesn't really give a clear indication, whereas the old way of, let's say, reading levels on 1 to 12, you knew if you were proficient, you were at grade level or above. Last week you had Miss Tish. She couldn't tell you really what, you know, what proficient was. So that's my first problem. I think that the rubric should be different. And the second one is the curriculum. The curriculum, you know, we're being asked to develop the curriculum. Well, then it's not really a Common Core curriculum. So, you know what I mean? There's nothing being in common from one school to another.
When you say you're being asked to develop the curriculum, what does the Common Core actually tell you? What are the guidelines that you're actually given?
Well, they give you a lot of standards, and then you develop something as a group from that.
What do you mean by a standard? Like children should know X by the end of this session?
Right. Let's say people should be able to write a research project, right? Okay, so you get together, you do something, you look at the standards. But the problem that the curriculum was meant to address, the problem with continuity and coherence, is there's nothing in common if it's different in one school from another. Mm-hmm. You know, it needs to be in common.
So I think that's an interesting point. One of the things we've done this past year in the elementary and middle schools is we have made available a common curriculum for all grade levels 3 through 8, and we're now working on that for high schools as well. So that will become available for high schools. The reason why we did it at elementary and middle school first is that the state was shifting the exams first at that grade level, and it's more slowly shifting at the high school level. But I also think a lot of teachers do believe it's important to have some ability to shape and customize the curriculum in their schools to their specific students' needs. And so when we do provide these curriculums, most schools use them as a base, but then they also innovate and shape them to their students' needs.
So is the term Common Core curriculum a misnomer? It's really a Common Core set of standards or skills?
Yeah. I mean, the Common Core is definitely not a curriculum. It's a set of things that we think kids should know and be able to do. And 46 states around the country have agreed on those things. And then the curriculum is different depending on the state, the city, and the school sometimes. And in New York City, we believe in providing resources for teachers, but we also believe in their own professional judgment to shape that curriculum.
So one of the things that we did in New York City, along with other districts, and Shale was a leader in this, in that the publishing houses were coming out with new books and putting a stamp basically saying Common Core aligned. And quite frankly, they were not. And so we told them, time out. And we used the muscle of New York City along with the other districts to tell them to go back to the drawing board. And we had a review team to take a look at the material. And then back in April, I guess, we came out with recommended guidelines of these publishing houses met our criteria as far as Common Core aligned. And then a number of schools had the information. They had a period of time, and this is 3 through 8, of deciding which one they wanted to take. And 90% of the schools selected one of the recommended guidelines, including some of the state guidelines as well, some of the state curriculum. And as a result of that, you had commonality there. And a lot of training has taken place over the summer. And again, the $100 million that I talked about will continue throughout the year. And as Shell indicated, you will now start to see that in high school as well.
Listeners, your calls and your comments and web postings, questions online for New York City Schools Chancellor Dennis Walcott and New York City Chief Academic Officer Shale Polakow-Saransky, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org or tweet your question at Brian Lehrer. We'll continue in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with New York City Schools Chancellor Dennis Walcott and the school system's Chief Academic Officer Shale Polakow-Saransky on this day that parents can begin to check online for your children's New York standardized test scores, the results from the new tests that were down so much from the year before because they're harder, being based on more rigorous standards that are geared toward college readiness rather than just passing. Also out today, a new independent study that finds big gains at some of the small public schools that the mayor and his chancellors have created. And I want to ask you about that now. This comes from the independent research group MRDC. And it finds the graduation rate after 4 years from small high schools created on the mayor's watch is about 70% compared to 60% for the control group schools. Do you want to talk about the significance of that?
Sure. So what this study did is it's the first kind of study like this in the nation that's seen gains like this for high school reform. nowhere else have you seen these statistically significant gains, because what they did is they looked at kids who applied to the small schools and didn't necessarily get in, and some got in, some went to other schools, and they compared what happened to them over the life of their high school career. And the kids who went to the smaller schools did much, much better. And they did better in every socioeconomic group: English language learners, special ed students, African American, Latino. And what it shows is that with rigorous expectations and a more personalized learning environment, our highest need kids can really achieve.
The report called these small schools charter-like. But these are mostly charter schools,
no,
or not?
Not at all. These are schools that are district schools that really, I think the report also talked about a bottom-up approach where they were organized by a group of individuals and working with communities, developing themes. They are not charter schools at all. To my knowledge, charter schools are not included in the study.
So does that cast doubt on the charter model and the centrality of charter schools to school reform, because quality can be achieved in the regular public school system?
It doesn't cast doubt on charters. If anything, it really reinforces and validates what we've been doing in school choice, quite frankly, and creating a variety of different choice models for our parents and our students to choose from, which include charter schools, but also include these new small schools that have done amazingly well. And to date, probably the number of new schools we've created since the mayor's taken office is roughly 656, give or take, new schools. We're opening 72 new schools this coming September. And the schools range in a variety of different choices. And, I mean, I'm always excited. I talk about our career technical education schools. We're opening up two new high schools, an energy high school and an emergency management career technical education. We have our PTEC, which the president talked about. We have the Harbor School. So taking a look at those type of choices gives a wide array of selection for our
parents. So many different kinds of high schools, especially for students to choose. But still on charter schools, I read in the press coverage that charter schools were also way down in these new scores. In fact, the average English score of charter school students was just 1 point higher from the average scores of regular public school students, and on math, just 5 points higher. I could look at those pretty equal numbers and conclude charter schools don't matter. End of story. Should I conclude that?
Well, I think these tests were harder for all kids. One of the interesting things about charter schools is they've taken the toughest kids in the city. They go into our highest need communities. And if you look at how kids in those schools compare to other similar students, they're much, much stronger. And some of the charter networks do better than others. We have seen that when schools band together in networks and they have an organizing focus, like on common schools, Success Academies,
the Icon
Achievement
Schools,
First, yeah, Icon, mm-hmm. those tend to far outperform the other charter schools and the city as a whole. And then there are also charter schools that struggle. And it's not by definition a magic bullet, but it is a strategy similar to our small school strategy within the district that has allowed innovation. And it's allowed really talented school leaders and really talented teachers to come together and build something new that is designed to meet the needs of students.
But the numbers, if they're equivalent on the English language test, for example, citywide public schools, citywide charter schools, that's not apples to apples, because the charter schools tend to have higher needs populations.
That's correct.
And on the MRDC study, it's about 4-year graduation rates mm-hmm. per se. But the recent stats from CUNY show that 75% of city high school grads entering the community colleges need remedial courses because they're not educated enough to begin freshman-level community college work. And I believe that's an increase in remediation over some recent years. So has the system been pushing more kids to a diploma for these good-looking rates when many of them really shouldn't graduate yet?
Well, no. Actually, what CUNY's done over the last 5 years is dramatically raised its standard to enter credit-bearing courses. And so the reason why more kids are going into remediation is that you have to get a much higher score on the Regents exam than you used to in order to avoid remediation. And the standard to get out of high school that the state set and the standard to enter college-bearing work is different. And it's intentionally different because they are two different skill levels. And so what we've seen is double the number of students over the last 6 years have met CUNY's college readiness benchmark. And so we think that as kids are graduating more and more, dropping out less and less, we've halved the number of dropouts, doubled the number of kids college ready, 40% increase in graduation rates, everyone is moving up. And we're nowhere near where we need to be. And if you look at overall college-going rates, not just the community colleges, which are the lowest-performing students, the number of college-ready is around 40 to 50%.
Let's take another call, and from another parent, Liz in Brooklyn. Liz, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. So, Bill, I have lots of thoughts about everything I've just heard. I am going to kind of just stay focused on the fact that parents have the possibility of going to look at their child's test scores today, and the reason I say possibility is because I do think parents have a choice, and I don't want to go on too long about that, but I do think that parents should know exactly what it is that they're about to see there, because as you can imagine, it is extremely powerful to see a piece of data about your child, whether or not your child is proficient in reading or writing or math. And when one looks at something like that, you want to feel really, really, really confident that the assessment that they were given was actually a strong piece of work, right? Mm-hmm. That the tests, the questions that they were asked were something that that were discernible in terms of what's the right answer and what's the wrong answer. So many teachers that I've talked to have said it was unclear what the right answer was, what the wrong answer was. They took nine-year-olds and eight-year-olds took 9 hours worth of tests. They we are unable to see the tests. The Lexile scores, the reading level scores were changed on the tests, and so now we can't really establish whether or not our children were tested on actual readings that it's reasonable that they that anyone at their grade level should comprehend. So, so I have some real questions about the actual quality of the tests. The tests are being ignored in terms of the teacher evaluation. There's so many areas and places where we're told that the tests aren't going to be used this year. So I think that someone's got to really prove to me that I should bother to go look at my child's test scores.
All right, great question, and there's a lot in there. Let me follow up on a couple of pieces of that. So, Chancellor, should parents even bother to go look at their children's test scores?
Yes,
considering the circumstances?
To answer your question and then her question, I think they should, but again, it's an option of that particular parent, but I think there's a lot of information in there, and it's information that's important for parents to know.
And she's asking for the right context through which parents can understand
what
this means and doesn't mean.
I would urge parents on the school book article today, it links to the state's website, which shows examples of test questions that are annotated that talk about why certain answers were correct and incorrect.
That's WNYC education website, schoolbook.org. Go ahead.
And that can give you a sense of whether you trust these exams as measures. It's fair to say that this is the state's first attempt at doing Common Core tests. By definition, a first attempt is not going to be perfect, and there's room for improvement. And I think the state and we are really interested in parents' feedback about what they thought of these exams and how they could be stronger. And we believe that one of the reasons a lot of parents have been frustrated about testing in New York State for so long is the exams too long focused on very simple skills, didn't emphasize writing, didn't emphasize critical thinking. And it started to shift. And this is a big step in the right direction and an important one. And I would say take this with a grain of salt, because when you look at this data, you're not going to be able to easily compare it to last year. We will be sharing a percentile band to show how did your student compare to other students in New York City, which would be useful information. Even if the scores are lower than you expected, you can see how did my child measure up with other kids who took the same exam.
And on the question that she and many other parents and teachers have had about some of the questions on the tests, are you releasing the actual questions?
So the state does the tests. We don't have any control over the exams or whether they get released. The state does that. They did actually release a lot of the questions, and they annotated the questions with explanations. That's what's linked to on the school book
website. A lot of the questions or sample questions? I know that—
No, a lot of the questions. About a quarter of all the questions
were
released.
So you think that you and others could assess the test?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we've looked at it closely, and we think it's a big step forward from the previous state exams.
But was the test too hard to be accurate?
No. You know, we looked at that, too, to try and see, is it fairly differentiating kids? Is it giving us a sense of the kinds of skills you would need based on the Common Core standards at that grade level? And it does do that. And we want to see the test continue to deepen and grow. as exams, but I think this is a big step forward.
But I think her questions are also extremely important. What we are doing is trying to listen to the type of questions that our parents are raising and make sure through a variety of vehicles we get back with answers, because this is new. This is challenging. It's difficult for people to understand at times, and difficult as far as making sure people don't do a comparison. I think we have a responsibility as a system to make sure we respond to these type of questions and other questions. So through webinars, through getting information out to parents on a regular basis, we will be addressing these questions. But we think these tests are extremely important and should continue.
Liz, thank you. And we have this related question that has come in via Twitter from a listener who asks, the Common Core is supposed to teach critical thinking. Standardized tests don't test that. Why link the Common Core to standardized tests at all?
So these tests actually do begin to test critical thinking. The kinds of essay writing assignments ask kids to compare two different texts to each other and make an argument about the author's intent. And you can see those questions online now. And I think there, again, any standardized exam is only going to be a small mirror of what actually you want in the classroom in terms of assignments. But these tests give a signal to teachers that it's okay to spend time doing research papers, to spend time having debates in the classroom, having kids really defend their ideas. I talked to a principal from a school up in the Bronx, Michelangelo Junior High School, who told me an amazing story about a sixth grader whose writing was totally illegible, spelling terrible. Teachers were really worried about him at the beginning of the year, and they started this debate every Thursday in his class. And about 3 weeks in, he raised his hand, and the teacher was really nervous about letting him do this. Kids were chuckling, and he went up there, and 5 minutes later, kids were giving him a standing ovation. And 7 months later, he'd moved from a level one to a level two in his writing. Now, he's still not going to score proficient yet on that test, but that progress that he made and the entry point that that change in teaching allowed him is helping him move, and that's what this is about.
But you're saying the standardized test can measure critical thinking.
Yes.
Without question.
Christian in Queens, you're on WNYC. You'll be our last caller. Hi, Christian.
Good morning. Good morning, Chancellor.
Good morning.
I'd like to ask why the DOE is requesting a variance to state law that requires school librarians in middle and high schools when every study is now showing that school librarians have a very direct and measurable impact on student success.
So we believe in librarians, and many of our schools have used librarians in really powerful ways, and I think librarians have a critical role in helping kids with research. What we're also aware of is that the world is changing. A lot more materials are available online. A lot of our teachers and principals have started to bring materials that used to sit in the library into the classroom. So we have lots of nonfiction books now in the classrooms. And so the idea that there's one person in the school that's curating all of the knowledge and the research doesn't necessarily always work. And so we want to have some flexibility to allow different adults in the school to take on some of those roles and hold the schools accountable for really delivering those services.
So at some schools, a librarian will be the best use of their resources if that's what the principal decides,
the principal,
and other schools not?
The principal has the ability to decide on how she or he wants to use those resources, and you'll have a number of schools that will have librarians there doing that. And there will be other schools where they want to use it a little bit differently, and they should have that flexibility, and that's what the variance is about.
Could it be that there will be a principal bias against librarians because it's not considered a sexy or directly interactive with parents kind of role?
No. I think one of the things that's extremely important, I'm glad you mentioned the parents, because part of developing the comprehensive education plan and through the school leadership team, parents should have input into that process and working with the principal as well and prioritizing on how they want to use the dollars. But I think librarians play an important role, and librarians will continue to play an important role. But we want that flexibility, as Shill indicated, to give the principals the ability to decide on how to use the money. The other piece that's extremely important is that we believe in having a strong library system as well. And so by having a librarian on board or working with another mechanism of having that type of service being provided, we want the flexibility to allow the schools to do that.
We're almost out of time with New York City Schools Chancellor Dennis Walcott and the Chief Academic Officer Shail Polakow-Saransky. Chancellor, what do these new test scores do to the legacy of Mayor Bloomberg on education? After 12 years, he has 26% reading at grade level, 30% doing math in the tests that you are here today touting as the most accurate. Can you argue that these years and these policies have been transformational like the mayor wanted them to be, if that's the best he could do with 12 years of effort?
Without question. One, let me just – it's not defined by solely these test scores. And I think what the mayor has talked about and we have talked about is tougher standards to make sure our children are college and career readiness. Before the mayor started, college and career readiness was not even part of the conversation. I think, as Shale indicated, you take a look at our high school graduation rate, it's going up to 64-65%, where for years prior to the mayor, it was flatlined at 49-50%. If you take a look at our dropout rate, our dropout rate has been cut to 11%, its lowest point in history. That means our students are staying in school. If you take a look at the choice system, we have choices that were never, ever dreamed of before. If you take a look at the sustainability of our students graduating in the fifth and sixth year, you'll see the numbers going up there as well. You take a look at the ability of our students to compete in today's society. So, for example, if you look at the schools in New York City back in 2002, out of the top 25 schools in the state, if you measure the state scores, zero schools figured out into the top 25. If you take a look at these latest scores, 22 out of the top 25 schools are from New York City. The mayor has done a masterful job in really restructuring a dysfunctional system and a system that's focused on our students. And I think to wrap it up, the key thing to me is laying a foundation. I think what we've been able to do is lay a very solid foundation for our students to succeed and being very transformational in that process.
And one other thing, though, there's also a drastic racial disparity that persists in these scores. For example, 15% of blacks proficient on the math test compared to 50% of whites, 60% of Asians. Is the persistent racial disparity a fundamental failure of the administration?
Unacceptable, but as we've always indicated that when a baseline is changed or the test change, we see the progress start to increase again. You'll find that over the next several years. That's why we need to stay the course. What we need to do is continue focus on phasing out those schools that are not performing well. And part of the choice system is providing an opportunity for those students, such as the small schools, as indicated in the MDRC study, that have done extremely well in educating those students, especially those schools that they replaced. The charter choice options available, and you will see that disparity shrinking. And then also you have to take a look at the disparity, and this is something that Joel talked about, Joel Klein, as far as narrowing the gap of the rest of the state, and the scores this year indicate that gap has started to narrow, especially significantly, 1.4, I think, in math and roughly 4 points in English, where 11 years ago, no one would ever dream that.
And let me ask you, speaking of dreaming that, before you go, The first times that you and I ever talked, before you were in the school system, you were president of the New York Urban League. Are you reflecting at all this week on the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington and the dream speech and how far we have come or not, especially in education?
Sure. I mean, I was at community events in New York City on Saturday, so I had an opportunity both to look on television and also be involved in different community events here in the city. And I definitely reflect back, and I reflect back to the dream speech, but I also look where we are now. And look at the progress that we've made, but at the same time, even with the disparity that we just talked about, how we still have a long way to go. I think Dr. King laid a foundation for all of us to be dreamers, but not just dreamers, to put dreams into action. And I think you've seen a lot of movement along that line. But I think also we have to continue to focus on the internal discussions within the community, especially the black community, as far as what we need to do to organize ourselves to propel the community further forward, but also what systems need to do to make sure we don't go lockstep to how things existed before, but always challenge the system to do better.
New York City Public Schools Chancellor Dennis Walcott, the Public Schools Chief Academic Officer Shale Polakow-Saransky, thank you both very much for sharing so much time with us and the parents and the teachers and all the listeners.
Thank you for giving us the time. Appreciate it.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, New York Times sports columnist Bill Roden previews concussion season in America, also known as high school, college, and NFL season. We are also going to hear why Roden thinks A-Rod was right to appeal his steroid suspension. Stay with us.